Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. It's Wednesday, March 23rd. It's a beautiful spring day in Atlanta. I imagine it's about the same in Dallas. I've got Sam Grass in the studio here with me this morning. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Brad. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great.
I know you're running from one meeting to another, so hopefully not too frazzled.
I think that's what you pay me for.
Very good. And we have Kevin in Dallas. Are you there this morning, Kevin?
Doing well, Brad. Thank you.
We have a very full house this morning, so we're going to kind of dive right in. We've got three people in our studio this morning from Compassionate Care Hospice, and I believe we have three people in Dallas from Hearthstone Assisted Living. Kevin, I'm going to let you go ahead and run with it.
All right. Thanks, Brad. Yeah, joining me today here in Dallas, I have with me Rhonda Bittner, who is the Executive Director of Hearthstone in Irving. Elizabeth Johnson, who is the resident care director, and Mike Gantz, who is the dying services director. Everybody, thank you for coming in and joining us today.
Thank you very much for having us.
Rhonda, we'll start with you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and how you came to be the executive director at Hearthstone.
Okay, my name is Rhonda Bittner, and I'm originally from Colorado. I did management in Colorado with CERS, and I moved to the Dallas-Fort Worth area to be closer to family. And I got lucky and got a job at an assisted living facility. Never heard of assisted living at that point. And I went in there, and it was this beautiful house that I wanted to move into myself. And started there and moved my way up to become their director. And I can't imagine doing any other career from this point forward. This is my place in life, is assisted living. I love it.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things that once it hooks you, you're in.
You're in.
So I definitely understand that. And Elizabeth, what about yourself?
I've been employed with Hearthstone for 11 years now. I actually started out as a caregiver and worked my way up as resident care director. I'm a native from Dallas, went to WTY High School. That's about it.
All right. And what about you, Mike?
Well, my name is Chef Mike Gantz. I originally come from Texas, moved all over Texas. Been in the Dallas area for, since 96, so about 14, 15 years now. I went to the International Culinary Institute at the Art Institute of Dallas. Graduated from there about 2 years ago, worked in several different restaurants, had one opportunity fall through, and through different contacts that I had made, found out about Hearthstone. It, like Rhonda, had never heard about assisted living before. But I was like, hey, I like seniors. I like talking to my grandpa and just the wisdom that he had. So I was like, you know, let's give it a shot. And again, like Rhonda, I couldn't imagine doing anything else. The residents that we talk to on a daily basis and that I get to serve is just phenomenal.
That's excellent. Going back to you, Elizabeth, why don't you tell us a little bit about what the duties of a resident care director are and what your day-to-day job entails?
Well, it entails that I'm in charge of the care for the residents. In care of the medications, the showers, bed changing, laundry, the total care, doctor visits, home health, all of that.
Okay, so you kind of oversee a team of people who help with all the day-to-day care for the residents?
I do.
Okay, all right. And Mike, I imagine, you know, from experience as a director of an assisted living, I know how challenging your job can be. What are some of the things you do to make the dining experience at Hearthstone something that your residents enjoy the most?
Well, one of the things that we're really doing, we're wanting to bring back to memory to our seniors what it was when they were growing up. You know, when they grew up, they didn't have all these processed foods. They didn't have all the pre-made things that we have now. So we're really focusing on my team and I, and I've got an excellent team that works underneath me. My staff of cooks just do a great job. And we're getting away from more and more of the processed foods and doing more and more scratch cooking, which is a Hearthstone. That's what we're known for, is scratch cooking. But I'm trying to take that to another level. All of our breads, all of our desserts, everything that we can possibly make from scratch, as least processed as possible. We want to give them a sense of what it used to be like. Another thing that we're doing, we're starting out trying to put together a cookbook. We're getting together different recipes from our residents and our residents' families of what they used to do with their families when they were still living in their own home. So we're taking those, and once a month we're pulling out one of their recipes and sharing with the rest of the residents the food that they used to cook for their family. And it gives a lot of the residents just get filled with pride seeing, you know, my son, this was their favorite dish growing up, and now I get to share it with everybody. So that's what we're doing, and listening. I think a big part of it is just listening to our residents. Our residents, you know, they have different tastes. They come from different regions of the country. All walks of life, and just listening to them and trying to fill their needs.
So, Mike, if I can interject and ask a question, do you then recognize these residents and the fact that this is a recipe from them and give them an opportunity to interact in that way with their friends in the community?
We do. We put out a memo. Our activities director, who wasn't able to join us this morning, she puts out flyers and we hang it up. And I have a little frame that's in our dining services area that puts their name in their dish. We have just started it, so we're still working out kinks. We're still working out ways to do better. I'd like to get a bio on them so that we can hand it out to the residents and they can read and get to know them better. So, we try to recognize them and let them know, hey, this is Mrs. Smith or this is Mrs. Jones's favorite recipe, and, you know, and try and tell a little story about it.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, that's a great way to bring the home experience mm-hmm. into the community.
Exactly.
So in the time you've been there, what do you have a story that kind of touched you or was the most rewarding type of experience that you've had there?
We actually have a resident right now that I'm not sure how much I'm not going to say his name, but he's a newer resident, and he's one that has really presented some challenges and really some opportunities for us to express to him that we're there for him. And I was able to go in, and he was having some problems and some frustrations with the food and different things. And so I got to go into his room and just sit with him and talk with him. And he was like, you know, I love strawberries. That's my favorite fruit. And that was just kind of in passing. Well, I just happened to get a fresh, you know, strawberries just came into season. So I just had a fresh batch, and they were just amazing strawberries, by the way. And I just gave him a bowl of strawberries. And I took him into him, and I sat down with him. And he just lit up, and he started crying. And, you know, he's a prideful man, so I didn't want to dwell on that too much when I was sitting with him. But, you know, he just wanted someone to love on him. He just wanted someone to really care for him. And I think that's our job more than anything else, more than taking care of their physical needs, which we want to, their dining services needs. They just want to be loved on. And that's what we do through taking care of their medicine and their clothing and their food and all that other things that we touch, their activities. So just love it on them.
Yeah, absolutely. Rhonda, from an executive director standpoint, you probably have stories just like that in different areas of managing the community. Can you share one of those?
I have tons of stories. First of all, I want to just interject about my resident care, and Liz didn't give herself enough credit. She is a phenomenal resident care director and been with the community a very long time, so she's grown with the community. And she has the hardest job of all of us directors. She manages all the care staff. She She manages all the physicians, all the home health, and all the families, and all the residents. So, I mean, she has a really heavy job, and so she does a phenomenal job at that. So I just wanted to make sure that she got the credit she deserves, because she likes to give credit to others and not herself. So she does a fantastic job at keeping our residents happy. And with Mr. Chef Mike here, he is doing phenomenal job at changing the experience for the seniors in the community. And so with that, we're having a lot less complaints, which is so helpful for me. because we are listening to their needs and we are listening to the family, and then they see that we're making those changes, that their voice is being heard. So if one day there's a little too much sugar in the coffee, you know, they're not going to be too, they'll just get another cup, because they know that Mike's done such a tremendous job of changing some of the really tough jobs. So I just want to give them all the credit, because without what they do, we wouldn't be able to be as successful as we are. I have lots of stories, but I think the ones that touch me the most, in my experience, I've been doing this for the past 10 years, and I'm always in the office and taking a lot of troubleshooting and trying to help fix problems or, you know, figure out where we're going to go from this point. And so at this one point of my career, I was so focused inside the office that I had a resident that was passing away, and I absolutely didn't want her to be alone. We partner with several partnerships, and they weren't able to get there for a couple hours, and her family lived out of town. And my care staff, you know, it's lunchtime, it's a busy time, and so I went and sat in there with her, and as I'm sitting there with her, I'm thinking, you know, she didn't know me, I didn't know her. And we came to this house together, and we learned each other. And it's amazing the things that we do in assisted living and even in the health care, because you don't realize that I may be the last person she ever sees. I might be the last person that she ever feels my touch. So that just made a sensation come over me to know that I'm it for her. At this moment, right now, I'm it. And I got to give it all that I got. And I'm going to get touched up right here. So, but that experience just made me realize what we really do. And so with that, my goal is that anybody that comes into my life in my industry, most likely we're going to the later years of life, and this are the ending years of life. And I'm not going to let the ending years of their life be miserable. I'm going to do whatever it is in my power to give them a great experience. And so with that focus, I think at Heartstone, we're doing a fantastic job with getting a lot of co-partners, home health, hospices, doctors, specialists that can come into the home and help care for our residents there in the home, so they don't have to experience the difficulties of going out into the community, the difficulties of maybe getting into a car and getting out of a car, and or with the dementia, the anxiety of coming into a group of unfamiliar atmosphere. So I think it's amazing the world that is in that building. A lot of people that aren't in the industry don't realize that it really is a whole nother world in there.
Yeah, it sounds like listening to you and Mike and Elizabeth, you're doing a very good job of creating an environment where people want to be. A lot of times, you know, moving to an assisted living isn't a step people are ready to take, and it sounds like y'all are doing a very good job of making that transition a lot easier when the time comes. You know, you alluded to the activities, and she wasn't able to make it. Can you just kind of talk a little bit about what you do from an activity standpoint?
Our activity program is really geared up. I have a very vibrant activity director, and she has included in activities lots of volunteers. So we have church groups that come in and do different activities weekly. We have a lot of our partnerships with home health and hospices come in and lead an activity. And then she also leads activities. So we just have a full calendar of activities. So we try not to leave anybody behind. So we're trying to get a focus on different levels of activity, and that's kind of our next step. So if we do have the resident who's having high anxiety today, we want to be able to address that and give them that one-on-one attention. So bringing in volunteers and other partnerships, then that will free her up to do some of that one-on-one with the resident that is might having a harder day, or the anxiety of a whole activity might be too much for them to encounter. So that's kind of where our focus is on activities. We want to make sure that we don't leave anyone behind and that everybody has an experience and has a good day.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Rhonda, just before we go, can you, if you had one piece of advice to give to a senior or family or somebody who's making a decision of what to do for the ending stages here, what would that be?
It would be don't wait. Don't wait, meaning sometimes we can't look into our own lives and see the issue. And you want to believe that it's not as bad as it is. So when you see your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, you don't see them in the same eyes. And so you don't want to think, oh, they don't need assistance. They're doing okay. I'll just go every day and take them dinner. I'll just go every night and make sure the stove is off. That's okay, but there's 24 hours in a day, and we all get consumed in life, and we all have to take care of responsibilities. So don't wait. If you think that there might be something happening, go find help. It's easier to get acclimated when you're not having as many issues. The move is easier for the senior before the issues start to really come out. So a lot of times people want to wait, hold off, you know, she's not quite ready. But really not waiting is the key, because getting them in, getting them acclimated, getting them to grow into the community will make their life more prosper than waiting until they're not as feeling as well, they're physically not as able, and then, you know, they're coming in, and we have to jump on the care heavier. You know, let's bring them in when they have a lot more time to grow and flourish in the community.
Oh, that's excellent. If our listeners want to get in touch with you at Hearthstone in Irving, how would they do that?
Hearthstone Irving, physical address is 2425 Texas Drive in Irving, Texas. Phone number is 972-659-6800. You can also email me. This one's a little tough. It's ed.irving@hscsal.com.
All right. Again, thank you all for joining us. It was a pleasure having you. And with that, we'll send it back to Brad and Sam in Atlanta.
Thank you, Kevin. And thank you to Rhonda and Liz and Mike. Appreciate you taking the time to be with us in the studio this morning.
Matthew.
Okay, so we're going to transition back to Atlanta here, and we've got three very energetic young ladies here this morning. So I will let them introduce themselves, but representing Compassionate Care Hospice, we have Tammy Yost and Jonna Payne and Lindy Bors. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
So
one, two, three, all together here. It's good.
Well, so let's just start, and we'll kind of work our way around the room here. If you could just kind of introduce yourself, tell us where you're from, where you went to school, and how you came to be at Compassionate Care Hospice. So we can start with you, Tammy.
All right. My name is Tammy Yost, and I'm from Alabama. I've lived mainly all over the South. Can't tell by my accent.
I thought you were from New York City.
Well, you know, my family, I want to say hello to Dallas because my mother's family all live in Dallas, so I've got a mixture of different ones for my accent. But I graduated from Mercer in Macon University, and I have been in healthcare for 15 years. I've done everything from nursing homes, assisted livings, family therapist, and now I'm back into hospice, back with elder care, so it's me.
Good, good. Jonna.
Yes, my name is Jonna Payne. I am from Georgia, born and raised, so very local to the surrounding areas that we cover. I went to Brunel University and Bodder College, graduated with interior design degree, and actually worked for a couple of architectural firms doing senior design and have actually worked in about five of the communities that I go in and either saw them on paper before they were built or helped through renovations and just really learned aging in place and senior care and the psychological aspect to it. Been in hospice for about 2.5 years and always say that hospice found me. Came in the time where I was going through my first death of a friend that I lost who was 22 who had cancer this time last year, this month. So that was tough, and then I was able to be able to put my grandfather on hospice and experience it. So I always say it found me at the right time when I needed to get my own family through it and to help other people go through, and it helped me. It saved me through some things that I didn't know how to deal with prior to this, so I'm very thankful for hospice.
Mm. Very good. And Lindy.
Hi. I am originally from Dalton, Georgia. And came down here about 10 years ago, went to Kennesaw State, and was in political science. However, about 3 years ago, I had the unfortunate experience of losing my dad, and it wasn't something that was very compassionate, and it kind of left me hanging. I found compassionate care through mutual people that I knew, and I understood the fact that what these families need when a loved one is dying is truly compassion, and that's why I'm doing
so in your particular case, your father didn't have the benefit of hospice.
No, sir, he did not, and it was a tough time. But now that I see all of the different services that you know hospice does offer to a family, I truly want to represent that.
Hmm. So tell me about somebody, and I'll just toss this out. So tell me a little bit about Compassionate Care Hospice and what sets Compassionate Care apart from other hospices in town.
I like to describe it a couple of ways. If a doctor came to you and he knew that you had 6 months or less to live, would you want him to tell you at the 1 month mark, the 3 month mark, or the 6 month mark? And what would you say?
The sooner the better.
Right. Why? Well, I mean, what would you want to do in those 6 months?
Well, for me, you want to be able to plan. You want to be able to spend the time with your family. You know, mend any fences if they needed to be mended.
Exactly. And I guess for us, it doesn't matter what age that is. I mean, majority of the work that we do is senior care, but we are in all the hospitals. We're all around. So we do everything except pediatrics. So that's exactly our main goal, is to create an experience rather than having something, I guess, where Lindy had a sudden death and didn't have the opportunity to tie the loose ends and have a good experience. You know, with my family and losing my grandfather, we had 9 months where we were planning, we were preparing, and then by the time that he passed away on New Year's Eve, it was a celebration of him and of his life. We were able to get portraits made, get family things together, and it wasn't this bitter thing. We were all very sad, but it's all good memories. And in fact, it made our family, we have a very large family locally in Atlanta, very, very close, and it was a blessing, and we did. We celebrated his life, and that's what we try to do to other families. We don't want it to be cookie cutter. They'll say, well, what do you do? What do you, you know, and I'll go down the spiel, but I first ask them, tell me your story. Tell me what's going on with your body. Tell me what's going on with your family. Tell me what's going on. That is how we cater to you. And we really just want to know, what are the benefits? How are we going to be? And what you need today, you might not need tomorrow. And the needs that you're going to need, it might be next week. But the worst thing that we just really try to educate the community rather than it being 72 hours. And you know, people are scared of the H word. And the families who have been in our service, when they hear about hospice, they're telling other people and they're saying, oh my goodness, it's such a good thing. You know, I got to do this. We got to create memory DVDs. We got to connect people through Skype that have family in other countries that might not be able to be in the room with them as they're dying. I mean, just things like that. And every day, if there's a need that we need, we change it to make it and add it to it.
You mentioned Skype. So tell me, how is technology playing into what you do, and how is it changing the experience for families?
A couple of different ways. Well, with digitally going with files and medications, we're able to get things ordered quickly, get those things out to the families. But as far as just connecting other family members, we've had families that speak all different languages, that have family in the military, that have family in other states that can't come. And if it is something sudden, you know, we'll put them, for instance, we have continuous care where we're doing inpatient level of care at home. It's the last 72 hours. And sometimes that happens sudden. No one has a crystal ball. We can only make an educated guess of how much time with the signs of their decline is going on. And the technology's allowed us, if something happens, they can't take off work, they can't get over, for them to be in the room with their family as that's going on, you know, on their phone while they're trying to get to the airport, at least to get there by the funeral or the last couple of hours. So different things like that, I guess, with the technology, just connecting families. And any other way that we can do that, you know, and being a part of the technology is making the DVDs that we have, memory DVDs, and recording last songs. There's this one lady that she always sang in the choir, and her favorite song was Amazing Grace. And that was her gift to her family. And she sang it. She had the energy to give that one last time when we recorded that. And all the family members that were there remember that moment. And that was her gift that she gave back to her family.
Tammy, you've been in healthcare a number of years.
Yes.
In your opinion or view, I'm sure hospice is competitive just like our industry is, the home care. What sets compassionate care apart?
I believe it's the care that we give. We, like John said, we do individualized care plans for our patients. We educate our families.
Mm-hmm.
Last night I did a dementia in service just mm-hmm. for some families that are not yet on hospice, but the patient, their loved ones are getting closer to that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that we kind of set the bar a little bit above what the other people do, different hospices. We have the first night home program. We make sure that our nurse is out there when the patient comes home from the hospital mm-hmm. so that everything is already in place. We don't leave until medications are ordered. There's no anxiety left into the home. Our RN comes twice a week, or LPN. Our CNAs are 5 to 7 days a week. So we're kind of just stepping up to the plate a little bit and making sure that the community and our families know that there is more out there than just basic hospice care. And we're finding out, we've seen research where if you are on hospice, you live 2 to 3 months longer.
Mm-hmm.
So,
interesting.
Very.
And what percentage of your patients are in a home environment versus in a clinical environment?
The majority of them, almost all of them. 50%. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about we do see patients in assisted livings and nursing homes. I thought you were talking about in-home.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, in a home versus in a nursing home or hospital environment.
Mm-hmm. It's half and half.
Okay. And typically, who is the person that's contacting you to find out more about hospice?
It could be the physician office, the family. assisted livings, it would be the nurse, and just basic people within the community. We have hospital discharge planners. We try to reach out to everyone because you never know. Like I did when I did my in-service last night, it was with an adult daycare. So we try to reach out to the entire community.
Anybody can make a referral to to a hospice.
So, but typically, and I'm gonna make an assumption here, and I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. It's not the patient himself or herself that's reaching out to you. Is it usually a family member, a child, or a spouse, or
a family member? A lot of times, if they are the elderly patients, it would be maybe the daughter or the son-in-law.
And what's the one of you made a reference to a kind of a fear of hospice in the last 36 hours. What are the concerns that people have when they hear the, as you called it, the H word, and then how do you get over that?
I think we often hear, I wish I would have started sooner, and that goes back to just educating these families. To know what hospice entails beforehand, they're not scared of hearing hospice in the very end. If they know what they have, what we can offer them, then they're just not as scared. That H word when they first hear it can often be like, I just heard the word cancer. Well, they've already heard that possibly. Now they're hearing hospice. Education is just, I mean, we're all advocates of it beforehand. Know your options beforehand.
The issue that Tammy spoke of, the statistic that those patients on hospice have a prolonged lifespan versus those that don't, is a telling statistic. That's something that the listening audience needs to grab hold of. The common thought is probably just the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think it's very interesting because how many hospices have we had on the show over the last year and a half?
Absolutely.
And this is the first time we've heard that.
Well, one of the things I think that helps them live longer is they're receiving the extra care. But we also, in our program, we have a Reiki master, if they'd like that. We do massage therapy for them. We have a harpist that comes out and plays. So it's kind of a holistic approach, and it's not just they're on hospice and they're dying. We try to give them as much of their life that we can back. And we have a foundation that helps. We had one patient that wanted to have a lift chair. They couldn't afford that, so we went out and bought that for them. We have housekeepers that come in. All of our volunteers are paid volunteers. Mm-hmm. They're not just volunteers off the street. They have to go through a 4-hour program in service. So we kind of put a little bit more things in it so that even though it is the end of life, it's not like laying in a hospital bed and that's just the end of it.
Yeah, we're very focused and committed to the quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
Tammy, you just mentioned your volunteers. It is a requirement, if I understand correctly, that so many man-hours, I'm assuming man-hours per week or month or however you measure it, must be on a volunteer basis. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so this is not only a service generating, providing service for a reimbursement. It is also a service of compassion, as you just said, a service out of the hearts, from the hearts of the volunteers.
Go ahead, John.
Sam, what I was liking to say, the reason that we're really big on volunteers is if you have a passion and a desire and there's something that you like, there's guaranteed that there's somebody else that has that out there. And we have about 70 to 80 volunteers in our office that have either gone through a life experience and want to give that back, down to people that used to play guitar, people that are artists. And those, you know, when you're handicapped to those things, not even with disabilities, but just with your weakness and your strengths, you know, just to be able to have someone that communicates your same passion is really, really neat. If a love for animals, a love for music, even baking, and just something like that, we like to team up the volunteers with the person and have those options. So they're not worn down. Each party is excited to have that person, and it's a neat team.
Do you find that former patients' families come back and volunteer? Do you ever see that?
We do, but we have to allow 13 months after they have passed away, just with families. One, we're wanting them to allow the time to grieve. A lot of times family members do want to volunteer directly after because they still want that attachment. They want to help them right away. But we want them to go through the grieving process, and then when they're finished, know with a clear mind, hey, this is where I came from. This is what I went through. You're going to get through it, and I'm here to help you. And so, I mean, that's how we all do with our own team, but it's neat to see the volunteers doing that as well. And we take pride in that. All of our literature that we have, you will see pictures of. It's not something that we hide. It's something they help us.
I'm going to throw out a topic here, and hopefully I'm not catching any of you by surprise. I spoke with Lisa Weber about this program earlier, and if I'm correct, Compassionate Care has a unique cardiac program that they are either implementing or have established. Would one of you speak to that?
Basically, just the basics of the program is we are able to come into the home or to the assisted living and do more things with a patient than the other hospices have. We have a nurse practitioner on board, and she's able to give IVs. Maybe if the patient is unable to, they're called repeat offenders basically by the hospital. They keep going in and out, and that's traumatic to the patient, to the family. The hospital loses money. So one of the things that we're able to do, Geraldine can come in, adjust their medications, whether it be a shot of Lasix in the arm or she has certain IVs and stuff like that that she can use, and it keeps the patient in the home. It saves the hospital approximately $22,000 per patient a year. It's really a good program. So we just now started rolling it out.
It is a specialty that Compassionate Care is moving into. Do you see a move in that direction, that possibly you have various hospices that are specialized in various end-of-life situations?
I think we're the only ones right now, except for maybe one more hospice in Atlanta that does this.
Yeah, we're really seeing, I guess I can, we had this experience last week. We're the only hospice that I know of, unless there's the other one that has rolled this out. And it's something to where normally these treatments can only be administered inside the hospital and or at home with a willing caregiver. And the biggest thing is 70% of people die in institutions. And of those 70 people, the family members that go through it, or as they're in the process of dying inside the hospitals, 90% of those people wish they were at home. But everyone is scared to be without that. And that's the thing, is providing, you know, a nurse and a nurse practitioner. So anyway, with the new Medicare bill that was passed this year, hospitals not getting reimbursed if the patient is readmitted into the hospital within 30 days. So they're actually losing money, and then they're also not fixing it. They're not taking care of the problem as long. So what's happening now is the patients are staying in twice as long. I mean, you hear now where, you know, you'd only go in for a day or two, and we're talking with families after they've just been so exhausted and been in the hospital for two, three weeks, because heart failure is the number one killer in Americans. So that's why we really wanted to roll this program out. Geraldine, we started it in the New Jersey office, and now we've been doing it in the Atlanta office. And the thing is, when you have heart failure and everything that's going on with your body, you're literally, people say, well, this is curative. This isn't palliative care. This isn't hospice. Why are you doing this? It's because you're literally drowning inside. It can be very, very painful and exhausting. And so anyway, we wanted to bring them, get them out of the hospital, bring them back at home, and be able to do all these treatments, do any sort of dimunamine drips and the Primacor and a lot of these treatments that have just never been heard of doing at home. And we have someone watching that and doing that. And no assisted living, nursing assisted living does not do it, and nursing home doesn't do it. But we were able to last week completely revolutionize this program. And Meadowbrook Nursing Home in Stone Mountain, we had a family member that had no family. And the grandson became the power of attorney, and the grandson was working a full job 9 to 5 and then working graveyard shift in order to cover both the expenses, the health care expenses of his grandfather and his own living expenses. There was not an option for him to go to a home, back to an assisted living, and the nursing home he came from wouldn't even be able to take him back because of the treatments. The hospital wouldn't release him because he had to have the dobutamine medications. So they actually, we went through intense training around the clock for 48 hours to 72 hours, getting the entire nursing home educated on this, And then we were able to bring that patient home, which is the first time that's ever been done ever.
So I heard you say a second ago that was thought to be curative versus palliative. But are you saying now that you're able to do this as part of the Medicare hospice?
Right, because the thing is, they're still dying. I mean, when you reach to a level when you are dying, there's not any medication that you're going to be able to get. So what we do is we flush those fluids out, we relieve them, we relieve the anxiety, and we get them the comfort medications that they're needing. And even though that's what we have to educate the doctors on, this isn't curative. Once it gets past the point where there's, you know, you can't turn back, at least we're making them comfortable. And that's how we've been able to do this process.
That's interesting. Sounds like a really valuable program.
The program works. It started in New Jersey. They've seen over 200 patients, not one single readmission. Mm-hmm. We started in June or July
of last year.
Last year.
And we have 83 now that have not had
not one readmission
either.
Not single readmission. It's working.
Amazing.
This program works. It's not one faulty.
I have to snicker. When I asked that question, all three of you looked at each other, and once you opened up the subject, each of you knew the subject very well. Good job.
So let me change the subject slightly. I've heard people talk about hospice before, and particularly about people that work in hospice, you know, comments like, I don't know how they do that. You're around dying people all the time. It's got to be so stressful. Obviously, the three of you love what you do, so maybe you can respond to that comment.
I guess I've never been scared of death since I was little. I don't know why. I know where, since I was 16, that I want to be buried up on, have my funeral up on Spring Street and 10th downtown, and had the opportunity actually a couple months ago to H.M. Patterson and see where I want to have my funeral. Sounds weird, but that was... But the thing is, I think it's because I'm at peace with myself. My parents gave me that peace. I'm at peace at life. And to be able to help other people, and people they do. Now, it does get to me. It gets to me when you have to watch your own family. You have to watch your own family members die. You have to watch close friends die. And when you hear the sad stories, I mean, I take on the burdens. When I go into the hospital, that's another story on my back. And yes, there's a lot of crying that I do. It's not easy. But when the look that I get, the memories that I have, them looking at me, I mean, it doesn't matter what age you are. When you have to go through someone dying, it's like they're our babies. And you just want to hold their hand. You want to just take care of them. You want to make sure that the experience that you had, you get to give that back to them. You get to know that they're just okay and that it's not something that's going to be shocking and that it can be a good experience, and that's what does it. But again, I'm a big advocate that hospice finds you. I don't think anyone plans. I mean, I do know a couple people that have worked in pediatrics and have said, you know what, I went from the womb to the tomb. I'm doing all spectrums. I like, you know, those different things. But the thing is, it finds you at the right place where you need it, to where you're helping out the families. And no, you can't explain it. You can't explain why you do, why you're comfortable with it, but it's so comforting. And I used to just say, I would even look at some of the nurses, how do you do it? But when you look in their eyes, they don't have to say a word. They tell a story. And that's a human being that has a soul, that has a heart, and that's hurting. And they're sore, they're tired, they're weak, and that's what you see. You don't see, we don't take care of dying people. We take care of living people that are in the process of leaving this world, and they are passing. But when you see that, that's what you have to get the point at. And I think anyone that does any sort of health care, you go beyond past of you're dying. It's not creepy. It's not weird. You're looking into their eyes. You're holding your hand. And all you want to say is there, I know, sweetie. I know you're hurting. We've got the nurses. We're going to be here for you. And the family. And that's what they see. And that's what we deal with a lot, is mostly the families and helping them. It's an option that they don't know they have, and they feel lost and confused and scared. If you can relieve that, that's what you're seeing. That's what we're seeing. We're not seeing there's a person dying on their deathbed and they look disgusting. I mean, we don't see that.
For me, you know, having lost my dad and having that experience that just completely shocked my whole family, I take each and every family and patient that I meet with personally. Mm-hmm. It is rewarding. I'm able to give them the resources and tell them about the different things that we can do for them and let them have a good experience. If I couldn't go through it myself, at least I can help somebody else. And it's all personal for me.
For me, it's the same as with them, but I come at it at a little bit different angle because I have a background as a family therapist. So when people, the family members talk to me or the patient talks to me, they're able to open up and tell me stuff. And you can just see the relief coming off of them as they're able to tell their stories. And I can give them suggestions on how to sometimes forgive their parent or the parent forgive them. And it's really important. And also healing for when I watch that process, they go through that process. It's rewarding. It's very rewarding.
Great, great stories. Let's kind of start to wrap this up. If you could give our listeners a piece of advice, what would it be? And I don't know if you all want to pipe in on this or if one person wants to do it, but let's just see what happens.
I would always educate yourself before anything happens. Know your levels of care. Know that there's home care. Know that there's home health. Know that there's hospice. Know what the differences are. So when something does happen, a crisis does happen, you're prepared. Preparation is the key. Just know it beforehand.
One of the things to follow up with that is utilize your resources. Call on family members. When you're in this crisis, the number one cause of abuse is caregiver burnout. Mm-hmm. You need to take time for yourself. We have different respite programs we can help you with. We can find someone to come in from the community. And plus, when you step back, and maybe it might be go to the Braves game, come back, you have a fresh set of eyes. You're not so overwhelmed. You're not so frustrated. And just step back a little bit.
The other thing is, you know, the biggest thing is if you had a friend that needed help, people are naturally, they want to help other people. And know that the resources that are out there, whatever you need every step of the way, that there are people there, that this is what they're passionate about. They want to help people. And allow to give over that responsibility to somebody that does this so you have the opportunity to be the son, the daughter, the child again that you haven't maybe been able to for years. So just, again, know your options, and if you don't, allow someone, be open to, and instead of being so pent up and scared, be open to allowing people to come into your lives that really, really do care for you and want to help you.
Great advice. And for listeners that might want more information, how would they contact you?
They can call the office, and we're located in Dunwoody, and our address is 4340 Georgetown Square, Suite 608, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. And you can call the office at 770-220-2723. And anybody that answers the phone is educated that they can say they can allow you to come for us to go out to the family and find the person that is in the area to get to you, you know, within the next hour or two if you're trying to get any sort of information.
And is there a website?
I believe there is.
It is www.cchnet.net.
Well, we certainly appreciate that. It's great information. And for our listening audience, I think that as you listen to these ladies speak of what they do, compassionate care speaks well of how they approach this business. Thank you very much. We certainly appreciate you being part of this this broadcast.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
That's it for today. We want to remind our listening audience that if they would like to listen to a rebroadcast of today's show, they can do so at www.ugeriaradio.com. And as always, we want to remind our listening audience that if the youth of this nation is its greatest national resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you and God bless.
Ugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.